It's here and now. In a Sacramento, California courtroom Monday, a judge questioned former police officer Joseph James DeAngelo Jr. about the plea he was about to enter.
Do you understand, Mr. DeAngelo, that you'll be entering guilty pleas to 13 counts of murder in the first degree, admitting special circumstances, enhancements, as well as admitting the uncharged acts? Do you understand that, sir?
Yes.
DeAngelo was pleading guilty to being the Golden State Killer, the vicious predator responsible for 13 murders and some 50 rapes and sexual assaults starting in the mid-1970s in California. Because of the pandemic, the hearing was live-streamed. Sadly, Michelle McNamara didn't live to see it. She was the true crime journalist who died 2 years before DeAngelo was caught through DNA evidence, but whose dogged work was key in helping to catch him. As the creator of the popular website TrueCrimeDiary.com, she gathered a huge community of online civilian crime solvers, detectives who took their research seriously, and was writing her riveting study of the Golden State Killer case, I'll Be Gone in the Dark, when she died. But her book is now the basis of an HBO documentary series, which premiered on Sunday and lets us hear her voice.
The great tragedy of this case to me is that it's not better known. I mean, I can't... I wish Zodiac would get rid of his 15 minutes of fame so that Eurons could get a little heat, you know?
Right.
Michelle McNamara's husband, comedian Patton Oswalt, is an executive producer of the series. He's worked tirelessly on behalf of his late wife's work. We met up at the Coolidge Corner Theater in Brookline, Massachusetts in 2018 to talk about it. Though as the star of films like Ratatouille and TV shows like The King of Queens, he acknowledged the absurdity of the situation.
There's a drop-off in gravitas when you're talking about this unprecedented true crime journalist and basically crime fighter. And here to talk about her is the other chubby guy from King of Queens.
Patton's love for his late wife is palpable. They had one child, and in the book, she writes about his unique gifts to her. You commissioned artists to paint her facing off against crime figures?
Because the three that she was really obsessed with were the Zodiac, and then D.B. Cooper, and then the Golden State Killers. So it's like a drawing of her facing off against each of them, like I'm going to find them somehow.
Michelle McNamara became obsessed with the man she named the Golden State Killer in 2011, when DNA testing connected perhaps the country's most prolific serial rapist to double murders. She pored over police reports, met victims, had thousands of digital files and an unfinished manuscript. When she died in her sleep in 2016 from a combination of drugs prescribed for anxiety and insomnia and an undiagnosed condition. In his grief, Patton corralled her assistants to complete the book. We sat down to talk about it, and a warning, we'll be talking about some brutal crimes, which started in Sacramento. I want to read a little of Michelle's beautiful writing. By May 16th, a surge of newly installed floodlights lit up the east side like a Christmas tree. In one house, tambourines were tied to every door and window. Hammers went under pillows. Nearly 3,000 guns were sold in Sacramento County between January and May. Many people refused to sleep between 1 and 4 a.m. Some couples slept in shifts. One of them always stationed on the living room couch, a rifle pointed at the window. Only a madman would strike again. But of course he did.
I mean, you know, he shook up the idea that a locked door, a bolted window kept you safe, and that can really spread like a virus and an infection through a community. That's the whole point of a community, is people getting together to feel safer. Now, suddenly, he was directly attacking that idea.
Yeah. She also describes what was happening, and I think one of her greatest contributions, because you know, we're used to hearing there's a sexual assault, and it's a horrible thing, but you're allowed to make it a statistic and not really think further about what that means. She doesn't let you do that. She gives you the details. The mother who crawls across the floor to a son's toy saw to try to cut her binding. The husbands, and this is very difficult to hear, but this struck you as well.
Yeah, it was the husband was made to lie face down on the floor. He would stack cups and plates on his back. He goes, if I hear any of these hit the floor, I'll kill both of you. It's an attack on the woman. It's an attack on the idea of a man protecting a woman. It's an attack on two people that are, you know, in love and pledged to one another. It's just all every single aspect of security and kind of light that he could attack, he would attack if he was given the chance.
Another image that stayed with me, The neighbor who tells her she's stunned to see a naked man, hand and feet bound, hopping out of the front door of his house. This is her neighbor. And she's like, what? It doesn't make any, it doesn't compute. But of course, he's trying to escape, she realizes.
It was just images like that that would kind of shatter what is supposed to be a place of peace and safety. And suddenly you introduce these almost avant-garde horrific elements to it. It's very hard to recover from that.
Yeah. Talk about the detectives. Again, here's her writing about them and how for decades some of them worked on this. Decades after retirement, one detective found himself squatting in the woods outside a possible suspect's house in Oregon, waiting for the trash to come out so he could swipe a DNA sample. The Golden State Killer haunts their dreams. He'd ruined their marriages. He's burrowed so deeply inside their heads that they want to, or have to, believe that if they locked eyes with him, they'd know. It's kind of like a bloodhound thing, a detective said to me, and this is Michelle. I believe if I were at a mall and he passed by me, I'd know.
Yeah, we had a big summit dinner for all of them to hopefully get them to maybe share some information.
Yeah, you said that dinner was like a Justice League meeting.
Yeah, that's how it felt. But, you know, these are people that their calling in life was to bring justice and right the scales and to go through your life and knowing there's this massive injustice that happened and you weren't able to right those scales can really, really eat away at these guys. And it's heroic how they just keep going back into it.
Yeah. Also, you were just in awe at their skill. Michelle got a thumb drive of a call from the killer. And you guys thought, well, maybe the caller was in a hospital?
Well, we're friends with this musician named Michael Penn, and he knew a guy over at Capitol Records that was really good at doing audio forensics and really got into the background. We thought the guy was calling from a hospital. It turns out he was calling. There was a TV on behind him with a TV movie where there was a scene set in a hospital, and that's what was going on.
And it's an audio expert, one of these detectives, who figures that out. I mean, these people are so good. And yet... he's not found. Talk about the toll this is taking on Michelle.
I mean, it was definitely affecting her sleep. It was affecting her waking life. She got a fast forward version of the kind of toll that it took on these detectives over the span of decades, you know, in the space of a couple of years. So it was pretty intense.
And she was starting to see how her obsession, the detective's obsession, in some ways matched the killer's obsession.
Well, yeah, she has a line in her book where she's like, the same drive that's pulling us to capture him is very similar fuel to what's making him go out and commit these disgusting crimes. So, you know, there's that moment of realization that, you know, it's hard to look at, but it's true.
Well, and you told us about a time these detectives are going out to these neighborhoods, they're going to these homes, mm-hmm. and in some cases they're wandering around the yards just the way he did. And they showed her, how you could look in windows.
Well, how easy it was, especially for these, single-level homes to just look in these windows. It's almost like a menagerie. They can't see out, and you're looking in, and it's a strange kind of, you know, she sort of gets into that head of, this is what he must have been seeing, and it's very disturbing.
It's disturbing, too, because she kind of likes it, this idea that you could look in and no one would know.
Well, she can see how it would become addictive.
Yeah, and troubling. Look, she is her work is amazing. She tracks down a set of cufflinks that for a nanosecond everybody thinks might have been stolen from one of the victims, and therefore if it was at a pawn shop, maybe they could track the killer that way. It turns out to be a false lead.
Oh, yeah, she went to so many weird twists and turns following down just a possible lead and wherever, does it lead to some kind of link? You know, you can't control what leads you'll be given, what clues you'll be given, and where they'll take you. So, yeah, she did that a lot and hit a lot of walls.
Well, and almost hit you.
Yeah, it was that crazy, she had been asleep, and I think the case was still in her head. And so when I came in, she, kind of woke up screaming and almost threw a lamp at me, because she was reliving home invasions in her head and looking at them through the point of view of the people that had been invaded and had been attacked.
Yeah. She's a beautiful writer, and one of the most glorious lines, there's a scream permanently lodged in my throat now.
Yeah, that's one of many amazing lines in that book.
Yeah. But what's so uncanny is that she wrote a letter to him. It's in case she dies, and warning of the online community that will pick up her work.
Yeah, exactly. There's more electronic windows opening up around you than windows you ever peeped in. And I'm just trying to open as many of those as I can.
It's almost as if she knew. She somehow knew. She wrote, I'm leaving boxes of stuff. Even if I'm gone, somebody's going to use my stuff. And then she was gone, way too young, way too soon.
Yeah, way too. I mean, it's, it's still a fresh wound for me, at least, so.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Although, you know, you've remarried and you're determined to live in the light, which this killer is not.
Right. That's like the best, that's the deepest rebuke you can give to an insect like this, is to try to live in the light as much as you can.
Yeah. Patton Oswalt, the book that he helped bring to completion, I'll Be Gone in the Dark, One Woman's Obsessive Search for the Golden State Killer, written by his wife, Michelle McNamara. Patton, we appreciate you so much. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Our conversation with Patton Oswalt in 2018. I'll Be Gone in the Dark is now a 6-part documentary series on HBO. You're listening to Here and Now.